In this lifespan, I have never been capable of living a double standard, certainly not for very long, because I would know that it's a lie. It's either one way or another. Which way is it? It can only be one way. Well, under the duress of being homeless, I've managed to live that double standard for all of these months, probably because I got in the modality of living this way when my trustee stopped paying the rent, maybe earlier than that, but that's as much as I can remember right off the top of my head, because I knew it was impossible to stay at the apartment building since she had stopped paying the rent. So what I'm finding is, or being reminded of, is that staying in this hotel for the last, I don't know, 9 nights, I think it's been, has shifted my awareness back to the standard upon which I had been living my entire life since I started to meditate at the age of 16. Namely, a householder's existence is an effortless, painless existence. There's nothing effortful or painful about it, because it need not be, because for every problem there is a solution. It's just a technicality to discover what it is. And thus there is no reason to suffer or argue or fight among the people you're living with, or struggle or make do without or whatever. It makes no sense, because the whole point of sleeping in a comfortable bed, having hot showers, having a 24/7 available toilet, clean bathroom, hot and cold running water, and a TV, oh my God, with multiple channels to choose from. I mean, and a nice comfortable chair to sit up and meditate. I actually started to meditate last night, because it's taken me this long to put myself back together again. And it was a very simple protocol. Borax in the morning and sea salt, sun-dried sea salt afterwards, the subsequent meal. Lots of liquids and very little solid food. And that helped put my awareness, my body, back together again, because I've been fractured all this time into a split personality, which is the dualistic personality that most people operate under. They go home at night and then they go out into the world, and they're two different worlds for many people, not everyone, but for many people, the contrast is remarkable that they survive. And Charlie Lutz used to say that, you know, when you're a young soul, you tend to be a very strong nervous system because you haven't had a whole lot of experience, and thus you don't have any karma to wear you down. But once you start getting karma, it starts to eat away, and it starts to eat away right away, but when you initiate the karma, but it's not noticeable until it returns, and thus matures and bears fruit, and then the mind starts to weaken, and it can weaken with each subsequent lifespan to the point that you're ready, I guess, to give up everything, because how else are you going to reach enlightenment? Well, since I was born with poor health, unfortunately, I was given a motivation not to give up anything, certainly not my health. And by putting it back together again, my body, my chemistry, my body chemistry, I was able to put my mind back together again. And so working Lyft now instead of Uber, which does not pay very well, very little business in the Lyft business, what I noticed in analyzing it last night while lying in bed, considering my fate, which I now face, moving out of the hotel, I couldn't work yesterday. It was impossible. because the first job was fine. The second job, I'm falling asleep behind the wheel. And the day before yesterday, I actually did fall asleep. I literally fell asleep at the wheel while driving with a client to the airport, a block, or, you know, I was in the midst of the airport vicinity, and I swerved into somebody else's lane because the road had curved, and I was still going straight. And he had to back away half a lane, move his car half a lane to the left to make way for me because I had moved into his lane, and he honked. That woke me up. I corrected my inadvertent lane change. Said sorry to the customer, and they ended up tipping me $10. But regardless, it proved to me what I'm doing to myself, what I've been doing all along, and why I come up with all of these screwy dietary restrictions, which are nice, but they don't work very well anymore. I mean, for me, in as much as they require willpower, or did. And I had it because I was motivated to live the double standard, I guess. Live the double standard and somehow retain my sanity, which, of course, is a contradiction in terms. But I lost the will, and I went back to sloppy eating. Eating starches, basically, because I know I can't handle starch. But I eat them anyway, because everybody else eats starch. And I always used to eat starch, but I don't metabolize it very well. At all. And then it ferments, creates alcohol, and then gives me the ease with which to psychologically induce, program my subconscious to want to go to sleep when I get behind the wheel, when a client gets in the car. Now, I used to blame it or give credit to the client calming me down, that, oh, I must be lonely, and so I'm tense and nervous, worrying until a client shows up, and then I don't worry anymore. Well, no, but then I worry when I'm driving, and then I don't kill anyone. Anyway, but what I see is the fact that I never really wanted to do this, because it's absurd. The only point and purpose of doing this job of driving people around was to have a place to sleep. And now that I don't need that, or didn't for 9 days, I was able to rediscover the relevance of borax by first bathing in it and then ingesting it every morning with yogurt. And now I had yogurt blended with applesauce, a whole quarter teaspoon of borax. And because that's not what the blood is made up of. The blood is made up of salt, not sodium borate. I have to auto-correct or, correct that imbalance by taking salted soup, a lot of liquids, afterwards, the next meal. And Sprouts Natural Food Market has sun-dried sea salt, which is the best quality salt on the planet, in my opinion, especially the literature I've read about sun-dried salt. Nobody makes sun-dried salt anymore, except very rarely. And this is definitely sun-dried. It's a tremendous, anyway. So what I've noticed is that sleeping in this bed for 9 months and now adjusting my, and so I was able to meditate. I was able to sit down last night and this morning, was it this morning? No, it was the night before last, was it? That's right. I think it was the night. Oh, I forget how many times now. 2 or 3 times. Yeah, I didn't do this morning's meditation yet because I've been upset all night thinking about what's going to come about today. But it's all a question of references. And so when I sleep in this and I regain my sanity, my wholesomeness, such that I'm not fighting myself anymore and I can sit down to meditate, it's a totally different standard. And driving around people is a joke. It's a bad joke. It's a very bad joke. Now, once I get back out into the car sleeping in it, it doesn't matter, because then it's like incentive. Well, you can't stay in bed or whatever, so you got to leave the neighborhood, right? You can't stay in the neighborhood. I can't stay in the neighborhood during the daytime because I don't want to get on people's bad sides. So I leave. So it starts, kicks the whole thing going, whether or not I got enough sleep, and I never do. But I go back to fighting myself again. It's probably why I haven't been able to keep up Borax, because when I was sleeping in the car, living a life of a double standard is almost a requirement. But then that means I'm constantly fighting death, because falling asleep at the wheel is a deadly thing. And I've been doing nothing but fighting it up until now. And when somebody, my first ride yesterday, said, you know, drive safely, I thought to myself, well, now I get a whole different spin on that. Don't drive at all is the only way to drive safely in my case. Because it's so absurd. Nothing since the eviction has made any sense. I mean, I destroyed the car, the engine on the car that I used to think I owned, but I don't. The finance company owns it, but that I'm still making payments on. I mean, a mere $20 or $60 a month? That's nothing by comparison to what these rental charges have been for the past 8 months. Because I destroyed that thing before I started driving people around, when I was still doing Instacart. But three years ago, I'm losing track. When I did Uber, it was different. I had a place to sleep at night. I had a car that was a reasonable cost to use for Uber. And so it made sense to work from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. and make a ton of money and spend it on all kinds of frivolous expenses. Some of them, Angel, the alcoholic I was nursemaiding, but it made sense because I managed to keep most of my profits. But this way, I don't keep any profits, and I fall behind. Hertz charged me a humongous amount of money, so now I lost $800 from my U.S. bank account, and it's now negative over $3,000. I think it's $3,200. They charged me $25, I think it was, the day I brought the car back. And I'm surprised U.S. Bank honored that. But in any case, so I switched to Chase some months ago because of the practices Hertz was doing, putting a hold on my account just before I'd pay the late weekly rate that I was late on. And then it would take 5 days for the banks to figure it all out, and then the hold would show up after the fact. So then it would go negative, and I'd have no money to pay for gas. And that was ridiculous. How am I supposed to work if they keep taking my money away after I gave it to them? When it happened the second time, that's when I opened up the Chase Bank, and my Social Security hasn't switched over yet. In any case, I had $800 in that U.S. bank account. And now it's gone because I have to walk away from it. I have to ignore it. With Lyft, so I switched over to Lyft and their rental program. They gave me an incentive, a reward for starting with them of $160, so I only had to earn $40 for the rental. And I increased my rental because I really need personal miles. So I made it the minimum 100 miles, but that makes it 240. So 240 is a lot less than 367 or 92 or whatever, you know. I was, you know, paying for Hertz rental cars at the end, you know, the SUV. Now I've got a little Nissan Altima again. Stinks like heaven, and it's got a bad filter. The filter is, I think, loaded with germs. So if I don't run the AC or the heat, I get those germs. But I'm not sure about the germs, but I do get a horrible odor. It's like one of these fragrances that are artificial, and it's so disgusting. I've learned to ignore it, but it's still disgusting. I've had homeless people in my car, or, you know, a few times leaving lice, so I've had to Delouse the car by spreading diatomaceous earth throughout the car. I've since vacuumed it up, not right away. So it's all about references. So since the car was never intended to make money, because it's impossible to make money off of this, it was merely a place to sleep at night. And so I had a different standard with which to judge my daily routine of living life a double standard, doing a job I didn't want to do and fight myself in the course of doing so to stay awake. And I've succeeded most of the time, but a few times I failed. Just out of the sheer idiocy of struggling against an impossible task of fighting oneself. So it's no small wonder I don't meditate for the last, God, I don't know how many years it's been, because I've been fighting myself. And the last day or so, day and a half, I managed to glue myself back together again. You know, Charlie Lutz had a lecture about that. That was back in the 70s. I don't recall the circumstances upon which a person would become fragmented that he described. Or I don't even know if he did describe it at length. He didn't. I think he just mentioned in passing that having achieved that state of fragmentation, it's very, very difficult to put the mind back together again because it's shattered in a million pieces. And I now know from personal experience what that means. It means fighting oneself, living life a double standard. You know, going home and then going out into a world that doesn't make any sense, where everything wears you down and you can't possibly make ends meet, and you know it. And then it becomes a losing battle, and then you wonder, what the fuck am I doing? Because the contrast is so extreme, it makes no sense whatsoever. Now, most people who are not meditators, that's a different story. The outer world has encroached upon their inner world, so that even in their private affairs with their family, life is shit. And they made a movie out of it with Timothy Hutton's son. No, Timothy Hutton. That's right, Jonathan Hutton's son. And that guy who did MASH, I forget his name, the TV series. No, not the TV series, the original movie that spawned the TV series of MASH. It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of his name. Famous actor. He was the father, and Mary Tyler Moore was the mother. And it was literally about a family that was just torn asunder by the constant bickering that went on. Unbelievable. You know, that's drama. That's Hollywood for you. But I guess in some households that's the case. Some figure they don't mean it, right? They just do it because it's the way, because they're dramatic, they're hams. But in some families, it's the reality, and it's, I know one, and my classmate who got me inspired to start meditating constantly between her and her father, and my mom's, one of her brothers, one of my uncles, constantly bickering with his daughter, constantly bickering. And he came back as her daughter, who made life miserable for her mom, and smiled doing it. And her mom just rolled her eyes because she didn't know the karma. I told her eventually, but anyway. So once I started to meditate, and I started to at least have a semblance of a life put back together again within myself, but not really, because Charlie Luce asked me one time, "How you doing?" And I said, "Charlie, it seems to me that I am standing opposed to myself, fighting myself." And he became so incensed. He turned away from me and poked the air with his finger, and instead of pointing at me, pointing at the air in front of him. In this lifetime, you're supposed to become natural. And I can see what that means, because you can't, if you live life a double standard, you can't become natural. You can't become yourself. It's impossible, because you're never yourself. You're fighting yourself. So even then, I had problems, and I had already left the house by that time. Mom had kicked me out, so I was living in apartments that she was paying for, and I still felt that way, even though I had no trouble with my meditation at that time. You know, I'd go to the Friday night lecture that he gave, and we'd have the group med, and I had great meditations, you know, but he asked me an honest question, and I gave him an honest answer, one that was in my heart. And now it has come to full blossom. And it's definitely very suicidal. I had a therapist tell me that in the 80s, that you're suicidal, we can't see each other anymore, because she was in such a state of shock, seeing through to my soul, that she was devastated. She couldn't believe that I would be that way. And I didn't know what she was talking about. I had to take it on faith, whatever, you know, because I couldn't see life becoming so terribly strained that that would come to the surface, because that's obviously the way I would logically think it, that nobody thinks or considers suicide unless they're pushed to the wall, but and have the psychology to think that way. Otherwise, most people would fight back. They're fighters. But I'm not. I'm not a fighter. I never was. Certainly. Well, nowadays, I think that's why I picked up my study of electrical engineering, because it gave me the chance to fight people. Instead of just being belligerent, you know, for several years, it didn't run, not right away, but when I came back from MIU, a failure 43 years ago, slowly but surely I became belligerent. And that was the beginning of my inner battle, in which I did not accept my fate, karma, my choices, the consequences of my choices, whatever. I didn't accept it. And so I fought them. Now, in a sense, I can understand what I was saying to Charlie was that I don't want to become enlightened because I don't want to deal with the shit that's waiting for me, knowing that what I know, that it's there. And having had a taste of it already, I even went back in time to see what I had done to one person among the group who was suffering to death and feel what she was going through. And for 2 weeks afterwards, I couldn't forget what I had experienced in my body, because after 2 weeks, I realized, analyzing it, that it was coming from space. It wasn't in my body. My body was simply taking up space, contacting the memory in Akasha of what I had done to that person. And now, after many years later, I suspect it was my mother that was among those people who were slowly dying of a merciless death, that I had given the executive order to pronounce. But it took me a while to learn that I wasn't alone in the guilt. I was driven or pushed into it by others who wanted it done. And it was my mistake to get involved with that. But I did it out of self-preservation, to stay alive. Little good it did me, because it's given me this karma to have to face when all is done, which may lead to me committing suicide, because I, at this point, I don't see why I would want to continue to live if I had to face that shit. And so that's why I fight it, because I want to live and I don't want to commit suicide, because I love life. I didn't have these problems, issues, when the first time I had a taste of enlightenment, when I was 19, because I didn't have this shit. But Charlie said, you know, every 7 years we come into a different set of karma. And so when I reached 21, that's when it started to make its inception into my mind. And I failed to fit into the movement subsequent to my birth date. Right away, within a month or two, I failed. And as karma would have it, mother came to visit with her third husband, and I didn't realize what I was doing when I said to her, it's okay to come and visit. I had no idea, because I had forgotten what the home life was like and had become instead acclimated somewhat, not completely, to a normal life in which nobody lives a double standard. Nobody lives a lie that they tell themselves. They just live their life. But when she came with him, I saw it as like luggage or baggage and a reminder at what I left behind that I had been so fastidiously trying to forget. But, you know, I didn't really, because I was fighting it. I was trying to immerse myself in keeping busy, and I was obsessed with growing wheatgrass, even though my body didn't want it. It wanted it living on the coast, but in landlocked Iowa, it didn't want it. And yet I kept trying to force it down my throat, and I kept myself so busy growing copious amounts of this stuff because I was keeping busy because I couldn't really face people, and I couldn't face myself. And it wasn't until the last Forest Academy, the last meditation retreat, the month-long that they include in the academic program, that I finally figured out how to cope, was to eat nothing but raw grapefruit and cooked vegetables. And I was able to settle down and have very nice, non-fighting internal struggle meditations. It took me 2 years to figure that out. And it was too late because I was already a washout. They already wanted me to leave for low grades. Because I wasn't attending to academic studies. I didn't care about that. And I forgot why I went. I went there to see Maharishi. And I wasn't there when he showed up to inaugurate the domes. And I missed him when I went to visit prior to going there. He had already gone there to inaugurate MIU, so I missed him twice. It wasn't my fate, I guess. In any case, I've had a really tough life because I've lived among people who are not of my nature, and it has been tremendously difficult to exorcise what I had absorbed from them, because being gestated in the womb of an alcoholic for two trimesters has turned me into a sponge in which I absorb people, but I don't have any shield to protect myself. Literally anybody who wants to have an influence over me can and does, and use me as a doormat or a plaything because I'm just a stupid idiot. I want to trust everyone implicitly, and if there are any signs or indications that things are not right, I ignore them on purpose because I don't want to believe in bad news, that maybe I'm not among the right people. And I don't even know if there are any right people for me to be around, because the only reason why I'm here is probably due to Charlie. Otherwise, I should have incarnated thousands of years from now, because I just don't belong. And I knew that when I came back from MIU. I don't belong in this world. But here I am for one reason or another, and I guess it is karma. Or else I wouldn't be here, a misfit. And very incapable of making use of whatever gifts I was born with, except for entertainment or self-amusement. It's about all it amounts to. Which never was an issue when I had no problems with my meditation, because that made up the difference. And I could put up with any shortcoming. But now it's like I kvetch because it's disgusting. Anyway, I was very depressed for 10 years after I came back from MIU. It took a long time for that depression to lift. That was hideous. It was a nightmare. The whole time I was there, I forgot why I went. And I didn't remember until I came back. I knew before I left, and I knew after I came back, but while I was there, I knew nothing. I was in a daze. I literally thought the poles had shifted, and the sun set in the east and rose in the west, and the aurora borealis was in the south, which I did get to see along the horizon in the summertime of all things, in the early morning summertime. But I literally had my compass direction, and I was in a daze the whole time I was there. I couldn't make sense of the compass being turned around. I couldn't make sense of anything, why I was there. I can't say I was a jerk, but I definitely was stupid, clueless, literally clueless. And it never dawned on me, never the entire time I was there, what I was doing, what I was there for. I think I had a momentary period of self-regard when we had a tornado warning and all of nature went quiet. Every single animal and insect didn't open their mouth, didn't make a peep. You know, the June bugs, all those animals, not a peep. It was so quiet, it was unbelievable. But aside from that, I couldn't understand what I was doing. So now I got to move everything back into storage and sleep in a stinking car, possibly with lice in the back. Even though I cleaned it, somebody went and put their satchel down that had been on the ground while they were waiting for me to come up to see them, to pick them up, I mean. So I saw he left dirt on the seat, so it tells me that he had it on the ground. And all of God, you know, a refrigerator is a great convenience because I get to eat yogurt, I get to eat bread, I get to not have anything spoil or turn to alcohol, like the bottles of juice I drink from, and fresh fruit on occasion, tangerines. But bread and yogurt has been a big part of my diet at this point because I can handle it. Oh, and soy milk. I took soy milk out of storage yesterday because I forgot I had it because it's in these huge cartons, which are no good. They go bad in the car within less than a day if you don't drink it all up. And they're quart size, or 2-quart. I love soy milk, but I haven't been able to drink it the whole last 8 months. So my diet has suffered. It's just, it's disgusting. It truly is a mess. I'll try and keep up the borax salt routine as long as I can, but now the rental period on the car is restarted, so I don't get to earn any money. It'll all go towards the car. I've got $40 left on the plastic they gave me. They took 30 out this morning. I don't know what for, where it went or why. And return all the comforters. Be sleeping with comforters for a different reason. I've been sleeping with them in the hotel room because I always get so cold in the hotel room or jet plane. It's always too cold for me. So I brought all the comforters in, and I had the luxury of sweating last night in bed. What a privilege. I notice I don't need a whole lot of supplements when I take borax and salt. In fact, I don't need any supplements. I don't need seaweed. I don't need vitamin C. I don't need iron. I don't need calcium. Oh, I've been dependent on calcium and magnesium for years. So having borax and sea salt in the diet has been a boon because I immediately absorb it. It doesn't take any digestive force to break it down and or whatever. I don't get foot cramps. I don't get stomach cramps. It's the only reason why I take calcium and magnesium is because of stomach cramps, calcium addresses, and magnesium addresses foot cramps. But I don't get any of that, and I don't have to drink my pee either. Because I don't get my foot locking up into a claw in the middle of the night. I don't have to take any supplements if I take borax and salt. And a liquid diet. Mostly or predominantly liquid diet. So I get cans of vegetable soup, Amy's vegetable soup, and I have a few other soups. Butternut squash soup, but that has coconut milk in it, which is kind of heavy. I don't even need to drink coconut milk. Well, that's because living in this this nice warm room, I have the luxury of not sleeping in a cold car every night, which kind of stimulates digestion. So usually I drink coconut milk because it comes in small cartons and it won't spoil that way. So it's been the only beverage other than water that I can drink. I can't even drink apple juice because that spoils in the car. Even the small Martinelli globular-shaped 12 or 8-ounce plastic jars, they spoil because I can never seem to drink it fast enough. Anyway, oh yeah, and I took out my air fryer. I've been using it for making sweet potato fries. Mostly, I think that's the only thing I like. I don't like anything else these days. Just light food. Applesauce. Yeah, I forgot I like applesauce. Somebody gave me pouches of applesauce yesterday. And a big tip so I could finish my laundry. So at least I got clean clothes. Anyway, so now I get to move back into storage. I have until 11 o'clock, and it's just about 8 o'clock, so I got 3 hours to move out. I'll probably do that first. I don't know what I'm going to do with the food. I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue with the perishable food. Sure has been nice staying here. Well, thank you, Bill. It didn't help Hertz, but it sure did help me enjoy 9 beautiful days. I can almost call that, what is it, 9 days of Shivaratri, or is it Mother Divine, or something? I think it's Mother Divine, isn't it? 9 days of Mother Divine? Boy, that was heavenly. I tried looking for other jobs, but it just, really, I've spent a whole lifetime living a certain standard, and it's only out of desperation that I work, because I sleep in that car. I work for the car to sleep in, because I know what it would be like to not have a car to sleep in. But living a comfortable life, there's no point or purpose to struggle. Why would anybody want to struggle to work? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Too bad I don't have any job skills. Well, no. See, that's the other problem. It's not that. That's what I've been telling people, but that, even that's not right. That's a lie. It's not for lack of job skills, because I could learn, right? But I don't, because I'm wired for voluntary service. For the longest time, I didn't do anything. I just griped about my situation, and then Charlie encouraged me to get into voluntary service. And that was 30 years ago, so I'm now wired for voluntary service, which evolved into self-study, because it's the yogi thing to do. It really doesn't have anything to do with helping humanity. I thought I could, but seems to be a waste of time. A pointless task. So it's been for my own amusement, basically. Although it's been upsetting to learn about all the lies in physics and electrical engineering. I knew they were there. I just didn't like finally learning what they were. But it answered some questions why I couldn't. That was one of the courses I took in college 30 years ago at Santa Monica College, beginning electricity, that I seemed to have a knack for, but I didn't like the way they were teaching it, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew there was something, so I walked out of class twice. Not even two pretty girls who wanted to be my lab partners who picked me, knowing that I probably would help them, and I would have, but I couldn't stay because there was something wrong with Ohm's Law. And when I confronted some professionals, in the end, they couldn't answer my questions because they knew what the answer was, and I had already stumbled on it, that they don't want electrical engineers to know the truth, because then they would stumble, literally accidentally fall into a knowledge of electrical engineering that's so different than what is commercially acceptable that it would destroy the economy and the Department of Defense at the same time. Because anything we can claim about nuclear power being devastating is also a lie. It's all electrical. The whole basis of consciousness is electricity in its manifestation, at its simplest level of expression, where the relative and the absolute bridge is the projection of time into space to create what we think is matter, but that's just a charade. It's a charade. It's an illusion. It literally is an illusion because it's a dosha reality, a mingling of the gunas. It's not even the cause. The gunas are the cause, but the gunas, we don't see them. We only see the doshas. The gunas are the prime mover of the relative, but we don't even get to see them because they're in the ether. And they have to be inferred. They cannot be measured, known directly, or anything. They're like imaginary. In fact, imaginary numbers enumerate the reality, the activity of the three gunas. And imaginary numbers have no physical existence, no physical proof. It's just some idea mathematicians came up with, the square root of negative one. It's like, and they take it, and electrical engineers take it on faith because it's there's no other way to take it. They won't admit to it that they're having to take something on faith that is half of electrical engineering. The other half is an illusory effect enumerated by real numbers and what we call the physical. So all of physics is a sham because it's merely a mirage. So-called nuclear power and the periodic chart of the elements, all of that is a charade and a sham because it's just an illusion. It's a shadow cast on the wall, as Plato would say. It literally is, nothing but. And everything else has to be inferred that is the first cause and the prime mover of relativity. And yet, it is an aspect of electrical engineering that is the source of free energy that nobody wants to admit to because they're afraid they'll lose their jobs and their reputation and be laughed at. I'm already being laughed at. It took me till now to figure out that the guy who came down to investigate, the FBI agent, he and his associates are busy laughing at me behind my back because, or in front of my back. They left a clue, and it took me months to figure out the clue. But I finally got it. And it was all because I saw a movie last night called Simon with Alan Arkin and a lot of notable character actors from the 1980 era. And I'd heard about that movie, but I'd never seen it before. I'd seen advertisements on TV, but I'd never seen it. And I saw the last portion of it, and it woke me up. I realized that the people over there are dealing with the case against Donna, think I'm a joke. They literally are laughing. They think I'm a joke. A fool. Delusioned. Yeah. They're convinced I'm delusional. So anything I say is a waste of time. And I couldn't possibly be a credible witness. This is what bothers me. How they could want me to show up. If I lack credibility, how could I be a credible witness? That makes them look like jerks and liars. Hardly noteworthy members of the Department of Justice to engage me when I'm not even a credible witness? Not unless they can back it up with their own research. But if they can't, which kind of makes sense, you know? If it's not in your consciousness, then it's not there. So instead it becomes a joke. Or I become a joke. Amazing. Well, I think I've covered everything. Except my mantra. I haven't meditated yet. And then I will proceed to move out and lose my food because I can't think of what to do with it. I don't have a clue. And my incentive to work is like, I know, it's at a low. I'll probably get it back again. Probably tomorrow when I spend the night in the car.